Part 3. Quick Wraps. A. An Overview. An e-commerce site, and probably any website, should contain some form of user agreement or a listing of the terms and conditions of use of the website, commonly called Terms of Service or TOS. The TOS grants the user a license to use the website under the terms specified, or simply states that by using the website, the user is agreeing to be bound by the provisions of the TOS. Just as in a bricks and mortar store, there are many reasons why an online proprietor may wish to establish rules of behavior, such as prohibiting the further reproduction of proprietary data or banning abusive language in a chat room. Terms of use agreements are generally established through the use of quick wraps. These agreements have their origins in software license agreements, which traditionally were contained with the software inside a box that was shrink-wrapped with clear cellophane. In the United States, these shrink-wrap agreements have been found to be enforceable in the Procedee versus Zeidenberg case, 86 F3rd 1447, by the Seventh Circuit in 1996, and in other cases. On the Internet, the same type of agreement is shown to the web user, who must then click an Agree or I Accept button to access the website. Thus, these agreements are called click-through or web wrap, or most commonly, quick wrap. B. Enforceability. In the landmark Procedee case, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals held that the defendant was bound by the terms of the shrink-wrapped license prohibiting commercial use of the software. The license was only inside the box, but there was a notice on the outside referring to the license. The court held that by using the software after opening the shrink wrap, the defendant had manifested assent to the contract as is required under the Uniform Commercial Code. This precedent has been extended to the Internet and quick wraps in a series of cases. In Hotmail Corporation versus Van Money Pie, U.S. 47 U.S. PQ 2nd 1020, Northern District of California, 1998, the court upheld the validity of a quick wrap agreement that prohibited the use of Hotmail email accounts for transmitting unsolicited mass email. In Groff versus America Online, 1998 W.L. 307001, a Rhode Island Superior Court decision in 1998, the court upheld a form selection clause contained within AOL's QuickWrap user agreement. See also Caspi versus the Microsoft Network, 743 A 2nd 851, District of New Jersey, 1999, upholding form selection clause in the Microsoft Network subscriber agreement, which the user was required to click I agree, next to the scrollable window containing the agreement. Although quick wraps can be enforceable, courts may require that users be given adequate notice of what the terms and conditions of use are, and that they clearly manifest their assent. See, for example, Ticketmaster versus Tickets.com, 54 U.S. PQ 2nd 1344, Central District of California, 2000, holding that there was no breach of contract by Tickets.com because there was no evidence that users were bound by the click wrap, which was buried in Ticketmaster's website. But see, Register.com Incorporated versus Vario Incorporated, 126 F sub 2nd, 238, Southern District of New York, 2000, holding that Register.com's terms of use created a binding contract with Vario, notwithstanding the fact that the user was not asked to click on an icon agreeing to the terms. It is interesting to note that many major websites, such as Yahoo, Lycos, and Amazon.com, allow non-registered users access without requiring a click-through, but do require one, except for Amazon, for for the user to register and have full access to the site, including services such as email or message posting. A recent case to discuss the enforceability of QuickWrap agreements was Williams versus America Online Incorporated, 2001 WL135825, Mass District Court, 2001, decided by a Massachusetts Superior Court. The plaintiffs claim that AOL version 5.0 caused unauthorized changes to their computers. The defendants brought a motion to dismiss, since the form selection clause contained in the Terms of Service Agreement stated that Virginia was the form selected for all AOL consumer suits. The court denied AOL's motion to dismiss based on two factors. First, the plaintiffs were only presented with the Terms of Service after AOL version 5.0 was installed on their computers. Even if the plaintiffs attempted to uninstall the program and decline the terms of service, their computers were already reconfigured. Second, the court held that it was against Massachusetts public policy to force consumers, whose individual claims were only a few hundred dollars, to pursue litigation against AOL in Virginia. There are at least three main ways to display a QuickWrap agreement when a user is first registering to use a site or to download software or submit an order. The agreement can be displayed on a screen with the I accept button appearing at the bottom, requiring the user to scroll down the web page to get to the button. This is not considered user-friendly, as a new web user or an impatient one may not realize that they can only continue by scrolling down to the bottom. The agreement could be placed in a scrollable window within the web page screen with the I accept button to the side or below that window. This appears to be the setup in the Microsoft Network case referred to above, but does leave some question about the user's manifestation of assent. It is easy to skip reading the agreement and just click the I accept button, and the user could argue that the part of the agreement not scrolled through was not agreed to. Finally, the I agree button could be located at the bottom of the agreement within the scrollable window, or preferably could be outside the window but would only be activated once the user scrolled through the full agreement. This would seem to result in the clearest manifestation of assent, although clear directions to the user in all three setups may be enough to demonstrate assent. Under USITA, which is discussed later, a safe harbor of sorts is created for agreements that require the user to click twice that she is agreeing to the terms. Although assent is the biggest issue in putting these agreements on the internet, it is important to note that the provisions in the QuickWrap agreement still must conform to traditional contract law. As stated by the ProCD Court, shrink-wrap licenses are enforceable unless their terms are objectionable on grounds applicable to contracts in general. As discussed in a recent Wired article, clauses that overreach beyond what is considered reasonable by the courts for these type of take-it-or-leave-it contracts will probably not be enforced. Anything that would be unconscionable in a shrink-wrap agreement could also be unconscionable in a QuickWrap, although the context could make a difference and courts have not yet addressed such a situation. For example, in Tony Brower v. Gateway 2000, Incorporated, 246 A.D. 2nd, 246, New York Appellate Division, 1998, the court followed ProCD, but found that a clause requiring that disputes be arbitrated under the rules of the International Chamber of Commerce were unconscionable. There was a $4,000 filing fee, of which $2,000 was non-refundable even if the consumer won. And therefore, that clause was unenforceable. See also Williams v. America Online, Incorporated, which held that it would violate Massachusetts public policy to require Massachusetts consumers with small individual damages to litigate in Virginia. Here are some keys for structuring QuickWrap agreements. Number one, the online enterprise should ensure that users clearly assent to the conditions of their website. Two, the terms used in the agreement should be in clear, simple language that can be understood by the lay reader. Three, the users should be required to take an affirmative step that indicates that they have read and have knowledge of the rules of the website. Four, an example of an affirmative step would be to require that users click an I agree or an I disagree button. Five, terms of use should be displayed in a central location. Online enterprises should refrain from locating their terms of use on the bottom of the homepage, where users would have to scroll down or link to another page in order to read the terms. C, USITA provisions. QuickWraps are also affected by the passage in the states of Virginia and Maryland of the Uniform Computer Information Transactions Act, USITA. This law was proposed in 1999 by the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws, which is a panel of expert lawyers and law professors. USITA is a model uniform law that applies to computer information transactions. Therefore, if a transaction includes computer information and goods, the Act applies to the part of the transaction involving computer information, informational rights in it, and creation or modifications of it. USITA Section 103. The official comment to USITA Section 112 provides examples of QuickWrap agreements as evidence of manifestation of assent to the terms of the contract. It also states that retention of information by the user is not in itself sufficient to establish manifestation of assent. This may go beyond what is required under the case law of some states. In addition to passage in Maryland and Virginia, USITA has been introduced in Arizona, the District of Columbia, Illinois, Maine, New Hampshire, New Jersey, Oregon, and Texas. Maryland adopted an amendment to its USITA provisions, exempting open source software, which does not charge license fees, from the implied warranty of mercantility. Enactment of USITA in further states may be limited, as it has come under strong criticism from various consumer groups due to the fact that it appears to have a strong bias towards licensors. Opponents of USITA argue that the provisions contained in USITA provide little protection for consumers who receive defective computer software. By allowing software vendors to disclaim all liability for damages caused by the software, leaves consumers with little recourse when they receive poor software products. Proponents of USITA argue that it provides a new common body of law to govern computer information transactions. Prior to the development of USITA, there was no uniform body of law to address these transactions. Instead, courts had to rely on the Uniform Commercial Code provisions that govern transactions in goods. In addition, proponents argue that USITA provides clear support for the enforceability of shrinkwrap and quickwrap agreements. Proponents argue that before USITA, it was unclear as to what standard shrinkwrap and quickwrap agreements had to meet in order to be enforceable. Section 4, Terms of Service. Since quickwraps will likely be enforced, it is important that the website owner take some time to specify the terms of use of the website. Like software licensing and terms and conditions on tickets. General contract law governs these provisions, and different practitioners have different preferences on how legalistic the terms need to be. To get an idea of what a typical terms of service agreement usually includes, we suggest you visit Yahoo, Lycos, and studentadvantage.com to review their terms of service. They can usually be found through a link at the bottom of their homepage. For a list of elements that are generally included in terms of service agreements, please refer to the background reading for this section. Customer service considerations. In addition to the issues of enforceability, practitioners should be aware of customer service issues when drafting a terms of service agreement. The Wired article discussed previously was written after customer outrage forced Microsoft to change a clause in the terms of service for its Passport site, which granted the company ownership over users' personal data. Customer protection laws in each state and regulation by the Federal Trade Commission may also come into play, particularly for sites selling merchandise. Internet sellers are bound by the FTC's mail or telephone order merchandise rule. The FTC brought civil penalty actions against e-tailers for allegedly violating the rule during the 1999 holiday season, and companies paid more than $1.5 million in total penalties. Some websites may wish to participate in the Better Business Bureau's BBB Online Reliability Program, or at least follow the program's guidelines. Please see the background reading for the five core principles of the ethical guidelines for online merchants and advertisers published by the Better Business Bureau. Section 6, Payment Technology. Systems available. The vast majority of e-commerce payments are done by credit card. There are two general types of payment systems available. For an e-commerce site of any significant size, the operator will need to open a merchant account and choose an online payment processing service such as CyberCash. For a smaller site, a third-party system, such as PayPal or MoneyZap, may be more cost-effective. The third party collects the funds for the website operator using its own merchant account and then deposits the funds into the website operator's account. It will cost $400 to $600 to open a merchant account, plus yearly account maintenance fees. Because of pervasive fraud, new websites may not even be able to obtain a merchant account. The online processing service will also charge fees for each transaction, as will a financial institution that manages the merchant account. The website will need off-the-shelf or customized software which can interact with the online processing service. This will allow the website to know within seconds whether the charge has been approved. The website will also need to have a secure server for transaction processing, or it can lease server space from a service provider such as itransact.com. Third-party systems can have little or no upfront account opening fee and can be set up with just a few lines of HTML code. While some may offer an instant approval or rejection response, others will only send the website an email with the transaction details. To use one of these services, the website operator will have to sign a non-negotiable user agreement or terms of service. The agreement is, of course, unfavorable to the website operator, but like the website users themselves, there is no choice but to accept the non-negotiable terms. American Express has also introduced a new type of payment technology in its one-time use credit card numbers. This new option would allow American Express cardholders to enroll in its private payments program. The new program allows Amex cardholders to use their private payment number instead of their actual Amex card number whenever they enter an online transaction. This private payment number could be used at any site that accepts Amex because the private payment number is linked to the cardholder's actual Amex account. Micropayments offer an additional form of payment technology for those transactions that are for small amounts. QPass Incorporated, an online payment firm, has teamed up with Trivnet Incorporated to develop a micropayment system where users can purchase goods from a QPass merchant and have that transaction appear on the user's internet service bill or telephone bill. These different forms of payment technology can offer consumers increased privacy and security in their e-commerce transactions. Fraud concerns. Internet credit card fraud is an increasing concern. Meridian Research estimates that online credit card fraud costs $24 million per day in bogus charges. For more information on fraud prevention, please go to the Worldwide E-Commerce Fraud Prevention Network, www.merchantfraudsquad.com, a website developed by Amazon.com, American Express, Buy.com, and others to help e-commerce merchants protect themselves from e-commerce fraud. As discussed above, digital signatures may be one answer to the fraud problem. Section 7, Taxation. In Quill Corporation versus North Dakota, 504 U.S. 298, 1992. The Supreme Court affirmed that a physical presence in a state was required for a corporation to have a substantial nexus to the state. Under the court's Dormant Commerce Clause cases, states cannot require out-of-state corporations to collect sales taxes for them unless they have a substantial nexus to the state. Thus, remote sellers, such as an internet retailer, are not required to collect sales and use taxes for sales made to purchasers located in states where the seller does not have a physical presence. Supporters of an internet sales tax argue that the current system discriminates against bricks-and-mortar retailers who must collect taxes in most states. They argue that it will drain vital revenue from states and local government as more commerce shifts to the internet. Opponents either oppose taxes in general or argue that applying taxes to the internet will stifle e-commerce. Some point out that internet businesses do not use the same level of local government services as local retailers. Critics also note that state and local tax systems are so complex that national collection is next to impossible. As a response, 31 states are working together on sales tax simplification. In April 2000, the Advisory Commission on Electronic Commerce issued its report to Congress, but the required two-thirds majority was not able to agree on an answer to the internet sales tax issue. For detailed summaries of state activity in the area of internet taxation, links to the Advisory Commission on Electronic Commerce report, as well as news articles on the tax debate and pro and con organizations, please see the background materials for this section.